Assalamu alaikum. You're listening to the podcast She Speaks Academic Muslimas. Today, we're speaking to Dr. Ilora Halim Chaudhry, who's a professor in the Women's, Gender and Sexuality Studies Department and the director of the Human Rights Program at University of Massachusetts, Boston. She's the author of Transnationalism Reversed, Women Organizing Against Gendered Violence in Bangladesh. This book was awarded the Gloria Anzaldúa Book Prize by the National Women's Studies Association. Her most recent book is an edited collection with Dr. Isha Nayogi Day titled South Asian Filmscapes, Transregional Encounters. Ilora talks about her journey into academia, the Bangladeshi Liberation War, its impact on the national identity, about how foreign NGOs create boundaries of savior and poor clients. And of course, we talk about her and Dr. Day's book about South Asian cinema and its influence in envisioning healing and reconciliation. But before we begin, I must urge you, please share this episode with your friends and family. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and please, please review the podcast on whatever platform you're listening in. Please support a diversity of voices in the podcasting world by liking, subscribing, reviewing, and or sharing the podcast. Assalamu alaikum, Ilora.
Wa alaikum salam, Sabah.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, I'm really happy to do this and thank you for having me.
Oh no, definitely. I'm going to start off just asking you about your journey into academia. What made you decide to be part of academia?
I grew up in Bangladesh in the 70s and 80s, and both my parents were educators. So in a way, I think that being in education, in the field of education, was always predetermined in that sense. My father was a professor and my mother taught elementary school early on, and she did stop working in the school after she had children. But we had a very idyllic childhood in the sense that we lived on the campus of the university where my father worked, and we were surrounded by other colleagues of his and their families and children. The students were all around us all the time. In fact, they were often our playmates as we were growing up. And this was also in the time of heightened Bengali nationalism, in the immediate aftermath of the independence war. And for my parents' generation, this was a very critical moment in history where they felt very much part of the nation building process. Mm-hmm. So in a way, they always encouraged us to contribute to that. So they had this really strong sense of working to build the country, as you will, and as part of sort of the intellectual and academic community, they played critical roles in that process. So I always looked up to that ideal in my childhood and growing up. And when I eventually went to college, that was in the United States, I came to the United States as an undergraduate student in the 90s, and I went to a small liberal arts college in Ohio, College of Worcester. Mm-hmm. And in fact, my parents had encouraged me to pursue women and gender studies as a major. Wow. And when I say this, a lot of my students, in fact, they are often surprised because in the US, in academia, students don't immediately come to women and gender studies thinking that, you know, this is going to lead them to a career. Mm-hmm. And they often find women and gender studies by accident or through taking a required course. But just as I was mentioning to you earlier, that in my parents' generation, there was this strong nationalist sentiment in terms of building the nation. And my parents always said that the future actually belongs to women, in a sense that the women's contribution and women's development, these would be critical areas of work in the future of Bangladesh in particular. So that really inspired me. And when I was a student in college, the work of women of color, third world women scholars really shaped my thinking. And I could see a lot of resonances between the anti-colonial nationalist sentiments in which I grew up in Bangladesh being reflected in the anti-racist, anti-colonial works of women of color in the US. And this dynamic really inspired me to pursue this field. And I think that that's what really generated my interest in the kind of research that I do and my work as a faculty and professor, researcher, student of gender studies.
That's so amazing. Your parents sound amazing. And you mentioned that the nation building aspect, for those that don't know, most people do know, but for those that don't, in 1947, the Indian subcontinent, which is present day India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. So in 1947, India and Pakistan had a very brutal separation into two different nations. And then in 1971, Bangladesh liberated itself from West Pakistan after a very contentious and bloody invasion from West Pakistan. And 1971 wasn't that long ago. Our parents were young men and women at the time, as you said. What impact did the Bangladesh War of Independence have on Bangladeshi sense of nationalism or on you as a person?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a really critical question. And as you mentioned, the anti-colonial movement that led to the partition of the Indian subcontinent into India and Pakistan. And this, of course, is seen as a liberatory history for both India and Pakistan. For Bangladesh, I mean, at that time, it was East Pakistan. That separation or partition is not necessarily seen as the moment of liberation. So in the history of Bangladesh, and you can see this, that how, in a way, the separation of West and East Pakistan by 1,000 miles of Indian territory in the middle created two wings of the same country that were divided not just by this vast expanse of Indian territory, but also linguistically and culturally, they were quite different. And post-1947, there emerged a colonial relationship between West and East Pakistan. So in 1971, after a long process of resistance and struggle for self-determination, Bangladesh became an independent country. So in a way, Bangladesh has this sort of unique history of going through the anti-colonial struggle in relation to British colonialism, but also the anti-colonial struggle in relation to West Pakistan, which really was a dominant force. The political power was centralized in the West. The East became sort of a source for resource extraction. And also there was cultural domination, of course, the movement for Bengali language to be recognized as a state language. And in the initial years, the West Pakistan government had wanted to declare Urdu as the national state language, which of course brought about very strong resistance movements in the Eastern wing. So for various reasons, this moment, 1971, is really seen as the moment of emancipation. And also what this really brought to the fore was the split between the Bengali identity and the Muslim identity. So Pakistan was founded as a Muslim homeland for the Muslims of the subcontinent, whereas in the war for liberation in Bangladesh, one of the justifications for the brutal military crackdown by West Pakistan was that the Bengali population in the East, they were not sufficiently Muslim. They were not authentically Muslim. In fact, they were closer to the Hindu-Indian neighboring state of Bengal, and that those influences were really making the population in eastern part of the subcontinent all the more un-Islamic. So the war was also in a way to discipline that population into becoming more docile Muslim proper subjects of West Pakistan. This split between the Bengali-ness of the identity and the Muslim-ness of the Bengali-Muslim identity really became a focal point for the conflict, but also the organization of Bengali nationalism. And I think that the establishment of Bangladesh as an independent nation led to really sort of focusing on this secular Muslim national identity for the people of Bangladesh, which of course has gone through various changes since the 70s. And I'm not saying that this is sort of a static kind of an identity. So on the one hand, this struggle for self-determination is seen as a glorious one for Bangladesh. But on the other hand, it is also exclusionary in the sense that nationalisms often are. Like Anne McClintock, the feminist researcher, has said that nationalisms are gendered and they're violent. So the liberation struggle is seen as glorious, as heroic. It emerged out of a massive humanitarian crisis. Official figures in Bangladesh say that almost 3 million people were killed. There was also systematic sexual violence against women that occurred during this 9-month period. And the story of the glorious birth of Bangladesh also, in a way, obscures that there were all these sort of violences that are not adequately recognized. So with regard to the question of women, for instance, that in the war, there were about 200 to 400,000 women who were raped systematically in rape camps by West Pakistani soldiers, but also Bengali collaborators and other Indian army. Later on, research has shown that it wasn't necessarily very much one group violence against another, but the reality was much more complicated. But anyway, this was sort of a military strike down against a largely civilian population. So that power dynamic, of course, is really paramount here. But in the post-independence Bangladesh, in fact, it's quite unique in Bangladeshi history too. The government recognized the women's roles and experiences in the war, and particularly the survivors of sexual violence were honored for their role in the war and given the title of Birangona, which means war heroine. So this was quite a remarkable turn of events. Although for women, this term did not necessarily bring honorable recognition. Many women were further stigmatized for what they endured during the war. And also feminist researchers have pointed out that sexual violence against women in conflict times, well, we have to look at it through a sort of a continuum of violence that occur as a result of various political and cultural inequalities as well. So the question of women's empowerment and recognition as full citizens of the nation has somewhat remained as an open question, where the glorious nationalist struggle of the war has not necessarily lent them full and equal citizenship. So that is certainly one of the questions around nationalism and its various underbellies as well in the context of Bangladesh. And of course, there's also what happened with the indigenous communities in Bangladesh. And you may know about the indigenous community in Bangladesh in the southeastern part of the country. And increasingly, there has been sort of, you know, Bengali settlers encroaching in that territory and a kind of a military, economic, cultural domination occurring with relation to the Bengali population and the indigenous community. And at the very outset of the nation too, this Bengali Muslim identity did not really give recognition to the indigenous communities of Bangladesh. So nationalism at the one hand is a struggle for self-determination and realization of the Bangladeshi nationhood, of course, but it also obscures these other kinds of violences against minorities.
Right. I wanted to touch upon your previous book just briefly. Your book, Transnationalism Reversed, Women Organizing Against Gendered Violence in Bangladesh, and the book looks at transnational feminist practice. It looks at NGOs and gender violence by focusing on the work done in Bangladesh around asset attacks. What was your main takeaway from that work?
So that book came out of my involvement as a community organizer with women's organizations in Bangladesh. And I started working with them in the 90s, and this was during the organization that was happening around countries in the Global South with regard to the 1995 World Women's Conference in Beijing, China. Mm-hmm. And this conference, among other things, really drew attention to the question of violence against women and led to the formation of a number of very important policy outcomes for the area of violence against women. And the women's rights organizations, the NGOs in Bangladesh, were front and center in this organizing. And I started working with some of the organizations around campaigns against gender-based violence. And one of the goals of the organization was to implement some of the policy work that emerged out of the World Women's Conference and develop policies to address gender-based violence in Bangladesh, and particularly around acid attacks against young women and girls in Bangladesh. So this work, in a way, was enabled by this global organization around gender-based violence. And the activist organizations in Bangladesh were very successful in tapping into those institutions, norms, platforms to bring about policy changes on the national and local front in Bangladesh. But what was also interesting is that this kind of organizing is also part of a broader NGOization of social movements mm-hmm. that many feminist scholars have talked about in different national contexts. And what it also did was, in a way, professionalize social movements, bureaucratized them, and maybe entrenched really hard divisions between various boundaries, like urban and rural and middle class and working class and those with resources and those availing of resources. So also the power dynamics between northern feminist organizations and southern-based organizations. So a number of divisions were also becoming really entrenched through mobilization of activism by tapping into these international movements of gender-based violence and human rights.
So, Ilora, I want to ask you, like, how does the NGOization, as you called it, how does that, or like this bureaucratization of social movements, how does that lead to these entrenched divisions?
So, you know, one of the things that I studied was that how women who were the survivors of acid attacks were the establishment of NGOs and sort of international donor-driven work around violence that was happening in the mid-90s and on to the early 2000s in Bangladesh really sort of hardened the divisions in terms of, you know, in order to avail of these resources, in order to get certain positions within this organization, one had to be educated in a certain way, you have to speak English, you have to be able to speak the language of international humanitarian discourse. And so it really put the relationship between those who worked and facilitated that kind of work in these organizations with the so-called clients of the organizations, mm-hmm. who are women maybe coming from a more marginal socioeconomic background. And in the work of the organization of the campaign that I studied, this was a critical issue. So the realities of the survivors of the violence of acid attacks were not necessarily fully recognized within the language of human rights and global feminist discourse. So one of the ways that became very apparent to me was, you know, I studied or I worked with survivors who were traveling between Bangladesh and various countries in the north, like United States and Europe, for medical treatment after the disfigurement that happens as a result of acid attacks. And what I noticed was that the ways in which that the work of the organizers on the ground in Bangladesh were really obscured in this representation of what was happening with regard to gender-based violence in Bangladesh when the organizations in the Global North, for instance, supported some of the medical and social work that came out of the organizing. So the feminist work in Bangladesh was really absent in this conversation. And women who were survivors of violence and who had really actively participated in the campaign themselves were really represented as victims coming from Muslim countries, and that the savior entities in this whole work tended to be the humanitarian organizations that were based in the north. So critique of really the inequality in the ways in which that resources are shared between groups of the north and the south, or the question of voice, the question of agency, the question of the capacity to shape the direction of a campaign. All of these things tended to invisibilize the work and the voices of women's group in the South, including the women who were seen as the quote-unquote recipients of the humanitarian interventions. And so in the transnational organizing, I think that was very stark, that, you know, certain geopolitical concerns were really erased in this transnational organizing and the way that it was being represented as sort of a rescue kind of a story of third world victims by northern-based humanitarian organizations.
Definitely. I definitely see your point there. I want to talk about your book that just came out, the book South Asian Filmscapes, Transregional Encounters with the University of Washington Press, an anthology which is edited by you and Dr. Isha Niyogi Day. And the book looks at Indian, Pakistani, and Bangladeshi cinemas and how they promote and reinforce hierarchies of identity. But it also looks at how these three cinemas are sort of intertwined together and how they disrupt the narratives that reified into our society. I wanted to ask, like, how did this project come about to be? And what motivated you and Dr. Day to focus on this?
Right. So, you know, I had been speaking of the nationalist sentiments, which really inspired me to think about anti-colonial and post-colonial critiques of the nation, as well as feminist critiques of the nation. So I think, you know, my entry into this work really came from both an interest in emancipation struggles, such as the Bangladesh independence struggle, but also an interest that whose voices are obscured in this emancipation struggle when we talk about it as a glorious one. And for me, I have always learned about the independence struggle from my family and community members, the way that they narrated these stories. And my mother, my aunt, their generation, there is a real rich tradition, I think, of telling stories of what they went through during the War of Independence in Bangladesh. And they often talked about these stories where, for instance, my father, who was an academic, and in the wartime, there was a move by Pakistan to round up and kill all the intellectuals of Bangladesh in a way to sort of break the backbone of the country, if you will. Mm-hmm. And my mother often tells the story of how he was in fact saved by one of his colleagues who was West Pakistani. Similarly, when after the war, the freedom fighters were actually trying to find the collaborators in Bangladesh who had sided with West Pakistan, and they had come to the campus to find various people who they thought were traitors, my father and many of his colleagues gave protection to their West Pakistani colleagues. So, you know, these untold stories, the real human stories that
right.
we often don't hear. And when we categorically create the hero and the enemy and the victim, I think does a sort of a disservice to the various connections that we also have across national borders. And one of the things that, for instance, historian Yasmin Saikia talks about it in her research about the Bangladesh War, is that there was a loss of humanity and that there was suffering all around. And what can we learn if we really pay attention to ordinary people's mm-hmm. stories about this suffering? And that's what really took me to these cinematic narratives that we focus on in this research project. In the context of Bangladesh, Liberation War cinema is almost synonymous with the national cinema genre of Bangladesh. And there are very few films that really depict the story through women's experience. There are few women directors and there are few stories that actually tell the story of women's roles in the war in a nuanced way. Women are often depicted as victims, as mothers, and as people who sacrificed for the war, that they did not have any kind of central role in it.
Would these be the controlling images that you talk about?
Right. So the idea of the controlling image, actually, I borrow from feminist sociologist Patricia Hill Collins, who talks about it in the sense of the representation of Black women in popular culture in the United States and how they're also often represented in very iconic ways. And often these representations serve sort of a national or a state-centered goal. And so in the context of Bengali cinema about the war, I find that women have been depicted very categorically as victims. And not only that, but even visually, you know, what does it mean to look like a victim in a war is very sort of categorically represented. The woman is shown as a very disheveled character, often shown as a mad person, and often killed off in the course of the film so mm-hmm. that they have to exit the narrative altogether.
Right.
But there are also newer filmic representations, particularly by women directors that I study, where I think these stories are more complicated. So for instance, Shamim Akhtar, who is a very prominent woman film director in Bangladesh, and in one of her films called Daughters of History or Itihash Konna, she traces this friendship between a Bengali woman and a Pakistani woman who are reunited after many years after the war. And they're both working for justice for victims of the war. And their stories are really intertwined in the sense that the Pakistani character, her mother happens to be Bengali and she was born in East Pakistan. But just before the war, the family left. And so they did not really know what happened during the war. So when after many years of separation, these two women are reunited, the Pakistani character is very surprised at the coldness that she encounters from the Bengali family. And she's not quite sure why she's receiving this kind of very reserved behavior when they, in childhood, they were such good friends. And so the story unfolds when the Bengali character actually asks her that why she didn't do anything, why Pakistani social justice activists did not speak up on behalf of East Pakistan at the brutal military crackdown that was happening. And so there is sort of a moment of reckoning between the two sides through the stories of these two women that is very powerful. And the Bengali character asks that, well, it wasn't really a separation, it was a liberation. And so, you know, this conversation that happens opens up a very painful history between the two women. And they proceed to talk about what justice would really mean in a context like that, not only through the means of the state, but also through interpersonal relationships and healing that may come out of that. So I think that in women's narratives, we see both the emancipatory side of a nationalist movement, but also the very painful histories of ordinary citizens, and particularly women. And also the whole question of healing seems to come out of relationship between two women. And I think that's also significant, that in masculinist tellings of the story of the nation, we don't often hear these stories that are also about the connections that exist across national borders historically, and how that might actually lead to a recognition of vulnerability, but also humanity of the other side.
So do you think, like, I know that you look at two other movies as well, but do you think that cinema in general then has that power to disrupt, you know, this patriarchal masculinist telling of nationalism and such? It has the power to re-envision healing and reconciliation?
I think that, you know, some of the, this is an edited collection, and one of the thrusts of our interest in this project was really to look at regional cinematic traditions. So think beyond the nation, and what were the connections between India, Pakistan, Bangladesh as a region historically, if we engage with the languages, with the cultures, with the conflicts, with the idea of identity that historically really goes beyond the borders of the nation. And there are stories in this book about cross-wing. So for instance, East Pakistan and West Pakistan collaborations in cinema, that the industries of the, in Bombay, for instance, and the connections that the industry in Bombay had with the one in Lahore, and individuals, directors, producers, actors even, who did not necessarily belong to any one country, but really traversed all three in the doing the kind of work that they did, that, you know, certain cinemas were filmed in East Pakistan, but the language was Urdu, that the actors were Bengalis, but they were also West Pakistanis, that the directors collaborated with members of communities that were not necessarily insular to their particular nation in a way, or, you know, a religious community or ethnic community. So these sort of cross currents that were very much present historically in the filmmaking industry, and even in telling a story, that often get really invisibilized in the contemporary moment because of these sort of hard nationalist sentiments and politics. And I think that the cinema is a vehicle to really think about nationalism in that sense in a more open and broader way.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Ilora. I mean, I know we talked about so many different things, but it was quite enlightening. I think this whole interview encapsulates a very telling history of Bangladesh and of the war and the power of cinema. I recommend the book, South Asian Filmscapes, Trans-Regional Encounters, for anybody interested in film studies, women's studies, global South studies, political theory that surrounds nationalism or transnational feminism. It's a book that touches on a lot of different themes. So I definitely recommend people to get the book, South Asian Filmscapes. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of this with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Thank you everyone for tuning in. Please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast.